Ask me from the beginning how many sermons this was going to be to teach all this. I don't know. I probably couldn't have told you. I'll probably just a few, you know, more than one, more less than a bunch, I guess. We're going to keep on going with this until we get done with it. And the reason I say that, I've learned with me anyway. Sometimes I'll make plans and I'll say things and I'll do all that stuff before I even ask the Lord about it sometimes. And then even then, sometimes I think he tests my faith and patience by coming in and changing things on me, which I'm glad he does, because I would rather the Lord to do stuff and things to come from God than things to come from me, if that makes sense. Now, that's also, as we get into these into the giftings that we're going to read about here in Romans chapter 12, there are some people that are a lot more gifted in planning than I am, and God doesn't seem like he changes their plans as much, but I'm glad he does mine, because like I said, planning is not a forte of mine, if you will. But we're going to be in Romans chapter 12 this morning. We're going to continue on with our teaching here. 2 weeks ago, we covered the parable of the talents, right? We talked about how the talents, the master came and gave his servants talents, and he said, hey, I need you to use these talents in order to gain more. You know, be prosperous with the things that I've given you, basically what the master was saying. Don't just take them and hide them in the ground like the one servant did. What that one servant that hid his talents in the ground was chastised, wasn't he? The master didn't look too keenly on that. And then last week, we went to how we're fearfully and wonderfully made. We talked about how in Psalms it talks about that. We talked about how when that verse says that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, it doesn't just mean how we look, right? The way God seemed fit to make us look a certain way or to have certain problems or benefits, if you want to look at it that way, when it comes to our looks. But that also goes to our personalities. God didn't make us robots. He did make us to be people to do things without thinking, in some instances, right? I know some of us do things without thinking, but we're all individuals, right? If God just said, hey, I'm going to program these people to love me, that wouldn't be much of a special relationship, would it? Right? Because, I mean, where is that? Right? What benefit is, if I was to go out there and look for a wife, let's say, and I found somebody that was programmed already to love me, I mean, I guess that would be some kind of relationship, right? But at the same time, what makes a marriage relationship special is not the fact that you love someone, but it's the fact that they love you back of their own free will. Amidst all your shortcomings, they still love you. That's what makes that relationship special. And when we think about our relationship with the Lord, that's what makes our relationship with God special, right? We choose to love him because he first loved us. And the more we get to know the Lord, the more we love him, right? That's what it's important to always be in the Word and be praying. So we see that God made us all different, right? Not only did he make us different so we would love him in different ways, if that makes sense, but we also can relate to one another in churches and even just out there in the world differently, right? There are certain things that Phil does really well that Bill doesn't do really well, right? So here we come together, and there's things that Fred does that better than, let's say, CD, for example. But you bring all that stuff together, and guess what? We learn to lean on one another. We learn to say, hey, so-and-so, I need help with this because I know you're good at this. You know, or you kind of lean on each other for different things. And that's why we have different personalities, right? The gifts that we're going to talk about today and the things about our personalities that we talk about today are what some people will call motivational gifts. Motivational gifts. Like, what does that actually mean? Motivation. What drives everything that you are, if that makes sense? Everything that you are, everything that you are, your personality-wise and all those, what drives those things? What drives you to be loud, let's say, if we have a party? What drives you to be the person that craves attention, right? What drives you to be the person that's outspoken or kind of sits back in the corner? What are those things, right? And these things we look at today in Romans chapter 12 are what you would call the motivational giftings, if you will, or motivational aspects about your personality. You know, what your personality is built on, right? So before we go any further, let's go ahead and pray. Dear Lord, as we come to you in prayer, Father, I pray that you'll speak to us this morning, Lord, into our hearts, Father, and not only just to our ears, Lord, but to our minds and our hearts, Lord, so we have understanding. Lord, so you give us something maybe, Lord, to even meditate on, something to think about this week, Father, as we part ways after service. We love you, Father, and I pray that you'll just be with us today. And we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so in Romans chapter 12, we're going to start off in verse 1 here. And it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Right, so one thing that's neat about that, we get ready to proceed our personalities, if you will, by what we see here. It says, prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. One thing, by being ourselves and by understanding who we are and using our talents for the Lord, one thing that we're displaying is God's perfect will. Not God's sometimes perfect, but God's perfect will. And I think that's kind of a neat aspect to look at. When we think about God's plan, His plan is perfect. Right? So when we think about all the quirks in our personalities, when I'm sitting up here changing the slides, there's an actual battle going on up here in my mind when I'm doing the slides. Right? Why? What in the world? What's so hard about doing the slides? When I was in high school, they tried giving me medicine for ADHD. I don't know how many of y'all know that. I'll sit here and do the slides, and I think one time I got behind. But we're talking about, what, 2 or 3 minutes trying to focus here, right? And I catch myself sometimes, I'll start thinking about something that the slide is saying, right? And I'll start remembering, let's say, last time we sang this song and what we were doing. And before I look up, man, I'm a slide or two behind. And I have to rein my... So that's a battle for me, just so y'all know, right? But anybody wants to come do slides, there's an opening, right? Just come sitting there. And that doesn't mean there's no opening. But you know, God's perfect will. Why are there people like that? I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily a strength in life or not, right? But I sometimes use it as a strength. Verse 3 says, "For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them." Now, one thing it says there in verse 5, "So we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another." Do you know one thing, that one of the punishments in prisons is that they'll put people on solitary confinement? Why in the world is that a punishment, being in solitary confinement? Because what the Bible says here, we're all members of one another. And we can't exist without one another. I mean, we can, but it'll start messing with your mind sooner than later. Something will break. Something gets twisted in your mind if you're forced to be alone. Right? That's why God made us for fellowship. God made us not only for Himself, but so that we can have fellowship one with another, so we can enjoy each other's company. Right? There's a natural side of me, and as we get through the giftings, you'll start to see the kinds of people that are like that, like this. But there are some people that don't normally gravitate towards being social. Right? Big social function coming up. I don't really feel like going. I'm not good about being around so many people. Right? But there's a step of faith in that. Every time Angela should be like, "Hey, we're having people over tonight," and I'll be honest with y'all, and don't push away Angela's invitation because I say this. I'm just being honest, right? But Angela should be like, "We got people coming over tonight," and man, I'll be like, "Ah, got people coming over. I'm looking forward to sitting in my chair not doing anything," you know. And that goes more to the personalities. But every single time, if not every single time, 99% of the times, once that's all said and done, I'll tell Angela, like, "I'm glad we had them over." That's a battle with my personality, that, hey, take that step of faith. You know, I rely on Angela's gifting and on her strengths, and the Lord put me together with her for a reason. I'll just, okay, Lord, I'll let her control it. I don't like hosting. I just defer to her. I'll tell, "Babe, where are we all sitting? What are we doing tonight?" You know, but every time, like I said, I'm end up being glad that we end up having people over or whatever it is. Right, so just so y'all know that. All right, I'm always happy about people coming over. So anyway, now we're moving on to the gifts. Verse 6 again says, "Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them according to the grace." Right? What does that mean? If we're going to use our giftings, we're not going to use it outside of grace, if that makes sense. Just because I'm outspoken doesn't mean that I can go out around berating people just to make myself feel better and yelling at them and putting them down. That's not what it says. According to the grace that was shown us, we have to use our gifts. So if God, obviously, we know by Christ coming and dying on the cross, He has shown us infinite grace, right? So I'm not to go outside of that and use my giftings outside of God's grace, outside of love, basically. Always use your giftings in love. Now, what are they? We talked a little bit last week about the first one, but we'll talk about it again this week. It says, "If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith." Right? And I talked a little bit last week that this is not necessarily the person, just like we see Isaiah and Daniel prophesying about end times. Right? We already have the Bible. We don't need to prophesy past that. In fact, I don't even feel like it. Once I talk about heaven, that's in the future. That's all the future I care about. Right? But, you know, so when it talks about the prophet being this prophet person, which is my primary gifting, if you will, my biggest strength, if you want to look at these gifts here, I'm an outspoken person. I like talking. I like telling people. I like seeing if something's wrong. I like to point it out. There's something wrong. We got to fix that. you know. But then there's strengths in that. My goodness, what a good thing it is. There are people that are hired into very high positions of management in big companies. They're put there solely for the reason that they can identify problems and point them out in ways that no one else can. My wife's uncle, he's a big businessman, right? Makes a ton of money, lives out in a place where there's lots of basketball players, and he's very gifted in that. And when he says, there's a guy that they have that's up on his level, same level, making a bunch of money. He's an ex-Marine. Not necessarily, they didn't hire him because he's very educated. They didn't hire him because he's got all this business knowledge. He said, the reason we hired this guy is because he's got a knack. When they go travel to places and they evaluate and consult with companies, he's got a knack for being able to see a problem and present a solution almost right there on the spot. And this is really simple. Hey, they hired him for that. Imagine that. You know, some of y'all can do that and say, hey, what's wrong with this right here? Why don't we do this and fix it? Boom, there's the problem fixed. You know, he didn't need some, 15 degrees to be able to point that problem out. But guess what? He's paid a lot of money for that, right? And you know, that's that person that they can see problems and they like to just talk about it. They'll point a problem out and there it is. One of the examples that I used last week was that, you know, if we have somebody come walking up here and they trip over this cord, right? This prophet person, they're going to be one to speak truth. The first thing they're going to say is, why aren't you looking where you're going? You know, pick your feet up when you walk, right? Or what another thing they might say is, who put that cord there? Why isn't that thing taped down like it should be? You know, that's what the prophet, as soon as that person falls and hits the ground, that's what that prophet person is going to say. You know, what's going on here? Somebody tape that thing down better. They're not worried about the person that fell down, right? They might after the fact, but their first inkling is to look at the problem. Man, what in the world is going on here? You know, somebody fix this, right? But acting in grace, right, how they should, in love, you know, hopefully they're saying it with a little bit of encouragement, you know, and a little bit of love in there. So the strength of this prophet, this person here, their strength is they'll just say things. A lot of times they show love by things that they say. I love telling my wife she looks good. I like telling her all these things. I hope she doesn't get tired of hearing it because that's about just how I show love. It's talking, you know, just saying, telling her things. You know, I like shoes, whatever, I don't know. Whatever I tell her, you ladies can talk to her. I'm not going to sit here and say it up here in front of the guys. You might laugh at me, right? But the weaknesses of a prophet is they can make people feel little, right? They can bring this truth because their strength is in telling the truth. What can they do? They can bring this strength and they can make people feel small, right? Because they have a way of talking. They have a way of presenting truths that if they're not careful can come across as real mean and hateful if you're not careful. Right? And thankfully, that's why my wife, God has given me a balance. My wife, she'll always point out things to me. Hey, you probably shouldn't say things that way. And of course, my first inkling is to say, well, why not? That's the truth. They need to hear it. Right? But again, we have to use our giftings as God has given us grace. That's where the point is. And thank the Lord that she has corrected me many times in place of the Lord. Right? God has used her, so he didn't have to come down and try to fix me. I don't like it when the Lord has to come fix me. Paul even says it in one of his epistles. He says, it's better that you fix yourself than the Lord have to come down and fix you, right? And I'm paraphrasing that passage there, but he's using that in relation to the Lord's Supper and things. It's better for us to fix ourselves, right? So God sometimes gives us time. God's given me a wife, thankfully, to help fix me in that, right? So some of the weaknesses, they can be impulsive, speak without thinking. I've never done that before, speak without thinking. And they would rather ask forgiveness than they ask permission. They'd just rather go and do something, right? Because they want to get it done. Now, the balancing verses to that, right? If you want to look at some balancing verses to just speak in your mind all the time, is Ephesians 4:29, so that says, your words should always minister grace to the hearers. All right? And I can speak about prophets all day because I understand that's who I am, right? And that my balancing verses, I always have to try to remember to always, everything I try to say has to minister grace to the hearers, right? Another one is, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, Colossians says. Another one from Paul. Right. So for those prophets out there, some of y'all that have your words get you in trouble a lot. Hey, try to always remember that all your words need to be seasoned with grace. They need to minister grace to the hearers. Right. Now, what's the next one? We got the prophet down. It says, if prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Now, ministry, let us use it in our ministering. Now, what is ministry? What is to get down to the base definition of what ministry is? Ministry is just serving. There are people out there that are driven by work. Some of y'all know them. I know some of y'all that are already like that. If y'all can't work, you find no self-value whatsoever. Whereas the prophet type, if they don't have a gifting of serving and of working, that a lot of times they'll find more value in things that they say versus things that they do, right? So a servant, on the other hand, the way they show their love is they'll do things for people. right? They'll find self-value in the stuff that they do. If they can look back on their day and seeing that their entire day has been completely full of work or doing something for other people, man, they felt like they've had a good day. Man, it's been a good day. Look at all the stuff I got accomplished. Man, what a good day it's been. Me, on the other hand, my serving gift, my ministry gift tends to be lower. And we'll talk about how you evaluate yourself in these, maybe not next week, but the following week, but how you evaluate yourself on this. But my ministering gift tends to be lower. Once 5 o'clock rolls around or once it's quitting time, I'm done. That's it. Don't talk to me anymore about work. I don't like talking about work at home. That's it. I'm done, right? I don't like having to stay late. I'll do it, right? And hopefully I'll do it without complaining. But that's not my natural tendency, right? My natural tendency is just, man, it's off. Let's go, right? If you want truth to be spoken, I'll be right there. If you want me to point out some problems, I'm there. I'm telling you. But if you want, you know, that tends to be my natural thing. My wife, on the other hand, she has a very strong ministry gift. My wife will work, as some of y'all ladies have gotten emails from her at 1 or 2 in the morning because she's still working. You saw a picture on Facebook she posted here. Angela's like, hey, I'm going to go down to the church. I'm like, it's 10:30. You're going to go down to the church and work on something? Yeah, it's just in my head. I know Angela. If she can't do it, she'll be thinking about it all night and not be able to sleep. So here she comes down here. Ariel's like, I want to go. And it's already late and Ariel's tired. And Ariel fell asleep on here, here in the sanctuary the other night while Angela was doing music. You know, this is late. Angela, she had to get that kind of thing done. But that's part of her strength, if you will. If you have that ministry strength, man, you got to work. You got to find self-value in working. And the way you express your love to others is by doing something for them. Maybe you make something for them. I don't know. You know, you might go out and wash their car or clean the, I don't know, something. You'll serve others. You know, that's your thing. You know, you'll see servants in the church out there cooking, right? Sherry's over there cooking all the time. She don't mind, right? She just goes over there and starts cooking. That's kind of like her natural bent. You know, some people clean the church and they never mind it. You know, they'll come out here and cut the grass and they'll just do it. That's how their mind works. Now, the strengths of a servant we just talked about, man, they'll work their legs off, work their arms off. They'll work and joints are bad because they've worked so hard in their life, right? They just work, and that's how they find value. Now, the weaknesses of a servant, this type of personality, what is it? A lot of times they'll put serving over everything else. I got work to do. I got no time for this. I don't have time for people because I'm working. I got no time. I don't even take break. A servant complains, and I say this jokingly, a servant complains that the Lord took a break on the seventh day. And Lord, imagine how much more the Lord could have done if he would have kept working on that seventh day. Right? Servants have that same mentality. They can't take a break. Why? There's stuff to do. Right? Forget, I got my list of 1,000,000 miles long, and if I work one extra day, I can get it all done. But that servant, what will they do? They'll finish all their list and say, hey, I got time to add more stuff to it. They'll start adding more stuff to their list, right? I see some of y'all laughing because you probably relate to it. But that's what the servant is. They got no time and they have to be careful that they make time for other people. Because if they don't, guess what happens? Man, they get stuck in their work. Life becomes work. And that's not what, I mean, if that's your calling, then hey, that's your calling. But at the same time, learn how to balance it out. Learn what quitting time is, right? Learn how to deal with other people. Learn how to take a break. The Lord took a break for a reason, right? Servants, y'all need to. Ministers, y'all need to do the same thing. All right, next one. What's the next one we got here? We got prophecy, we got ministry, the servant. He who teaches in teaching. All right, now what's a teacher? A teacher is somebody that loves details, right? Sometimes you'll get together with people and they like talking about, you might talk about football, let's say. They'll get together and start talking about football and you've changed subject a couple times and then all of a sudden, guess what? They're still talking about football, the ins and outs, the minute details of football, right? There you go. There's your teacher person. They love the detail. Wait, let me go back to, so I forgot to do this. When it comes to this person falling over the cord, right? We talked about how the prophet fits in there. How does the minister fit in, right? How does the servant fit in, right? How does the servant, so-and-so comes up here, they trip over the cord. The prophet says, pick your feet up, crazy, you know, learn how to walk. And somebody tape this thing down. It needs to be taped down, right? Who's the servant? The servant is the person that once the problem's identified, the prophet says, hey, this needs to be taped down. The servant's the first person that their first inkling is, let's fix that problem. Let me actually put my hands on it and go get the tape. You know, what do we need? We need tape. All right, I'm going to get the tape. They might come back with tape and a tape measure, you know, and make sure they're doing it right. That's the servant there. They're working physically to fix the problem. All right, so, okay, I don't want to forget that. Teachers, here we go. Teachers love, they love detail. They love detail. They love finding detail in things. Right, they might look at a leaf and not just, oh, the leaf is green and throw it down on the ground. They might pick up a leaf and start to look at all the lines in the leaves. Why is the leaf shaped this way? They start asking these questions. huh, let me go read this. Why is there different colors? I turn the leaf over, there's a different color on it. You know, and they'll start looking at all these little details. And guess what excites them? The details. Once they figure something out, they want to go talk about it. Man, look at all these details. Look at all the stuff that I found and all these details. I read this book and I want to talk about everything that I read in this book. You know, on page this, paragraph, second paragraph, third line down. And this is how their mind thinks. They love learning. They love reading many times. They like adventures only for the fact that they can learn something else. All right, that's the kind of people that teachers are. They're good at taking, let's say, a passage of the Bible and talking about the details of it. Maybe not application, right? That's almost a different piece. Maybe not application of what they read, but they're good at looking at, let's say, the book of Acts. We've been studying the book of Acts in the Wednesday morning Bible study. One thing that's hard for me, and it's not my natural bend, is to go out there and find all the historical facts and details on everything. I can do it, but I get tired of doing it, right? I can only focus on that for so long before, man, I need to take a break, right? Those kinds of details aren't necessarily my forte. I can talk application all day long. I can look at Psalms and I can look at a verse and I can tell you everything about that verse. Why? That's where that prophet thing comes out. Because I see truths in there. I see truths to be able to pull truths out of that. But then the details, as far as, back in this day when Paul was, he was on the Sanhedrin, right? And one of the details I pulled out of there through study was that if Paul was on the Sanhedrin and he was casting votes against the Christians he was persecuting, that means also that he had to have been married at some point, right? Because the rule of the Sanhedrin and the governing body of the Jews at that point was saying that they all had to be married if they were on the Pharisaical side, right? That's the kind of detail that I think is interesting to pull out. But if I go looking for all these details, I get tired after a while. Oh my goodness, right? The journey that Paul took when they sailed from Jerusalem to Rome and all the storms and stuff. Man, I like it, but I get tired of it after a while. Teachers, on the other hand, details all day long, they don't care, right? There it is. Detail, they'll go details all day long. And that's a good strength. They enjoy knowledge. They like teaching. They like to relay the knowledge that they've learned to others. But what is a weakness of a teacher? Weakness of teachers, sometimes they can push people away. They can look down at their noses at people that don't like to learn, that don't value scholarship and intelligence and learning and all this stuff. Sometimes they can look down at people, you know, and in turn, they can put themselves up and say, I've spent all this time studying. I've heard preachers say before that, and if this is their gifting, hey, more power to them. But they would brag about all the hours that they would spend in studying. And I've been berated before. I heard one guy said, this is kind of it's funny to me, because I didn't understand how in the world he did this. But he said, for every sermon that I teach, he said, I spend probably a good 8 to 10 hours studying for each thing. And I was like, man, that's pretty good. 8 to 10 hours studying for one sermon? Like, that's pretty good. I didn't say anything. My uncle's the one that said this, right? Well, my uncle didn't say the hours, but he's the one that had a rebuttal to that. He says, well, don't you work? Don't you have a job? Yeah, I have a job too. It's like, so he started breaking it down. He said, so if you do all this stuff, it's like, so you're telling me that there's more hours in a week than what you're claiming because you work here, you did this, and then you weren't spending no 8 to 10 hours. But the same part, but his point was, I spend a lot of time studying, which is good, right? But there's my uncle with the prophet. You know, he found the problem and said, hey, there's something wrong here. I was too young to point this out because the guy that said it was a lot older than me, so I wasn't going to, you know, try to correct an elder going against the wishes of the Bible here. My uncle did it, and that was funny to me. But that's a teacher. They love details. Right? And they can wear people down by details if they're not careful. Wear people down. People don't want to talk to them anymore because, man, they're going to talk about this. They're going to talk about horse racing for hours if you let them. Right? Sometimes, but there's other people that like that. Right? And there's reasons we need teachers. Okay? So it's not a bad thing. The last one we'll look at this morning is the exhorter. Now, what's the teacher? Oh, the teacher in the situation where somebody falls down, the prophet says, pick your feet up, you know, learn how to walk, you know, or somebody, you know, fix this thing. The servant, what do they? They look for how they can put their hands on the problem. Oh, he says we need to fix this. Let me go fix it, right? Let me be the person to straighten everything out, right? Now, what's the teacher do? Now, the teacher's going to come alongside this person and almost like the prophet, but they're going to come with more details. Instead of saying, pick your feet up, silly guy or silly woman, you know, learn how to walk, they're going to come alongside and say, hey, you know, there's these special shoes out there that help you walk better. And you know, there's a proper form to walking. If you look down at your feet at the same time that you're looking forward, then you know, you can kind of watch where you're walking. I mean, that sounds like common sense. But the teacher's going to find some way to find some teaching moment to help correct the situation. Right? They're not worried about the injury. They're not worried about the cord, maybe. But they're more worried about the person. Say, hey, let me help you walk better. Right? Let me help you walk better. I noticed a problem in your walking there. Let's see if we can fix that. That's what a teacher's going to come up and do. Now the exhorter, this is the last one we'll look at this morning. The exhorter. Exhorter is basically a person that encourages others. Let's see, it's he who teaches, he who exhorts in verse 8, in exhortation. Right? So the exhorter is somebody that's an encourager. If you ever get into a party, a group of people, you will always be able to find the exhorter because they tend to be the loudest person in a group of people. They're the loudest, they're the one laughing the loudest, they're the ones kind of steering everybody's conversation, they're the one that's they're the person that's that always having a good time. It doesn't matter what's going on. It doesn't matter if we're out there cutting grass, let's say, and it's hot, you want something to drink, there's nothing to drink, and your mower just broke down, and it's just not going right. You know, it's 95 degrees out, and man, it's hot. The exhorter is that person that finds something good in there and starts making jokes, right? Man, you're sweating an awful lot. You know, they'll just that's who the encourager is, the exhorter. This person that's kind of like the life of the party. You know, they like to always have a good time. Not only do they like to have a good time, they like to make sure everybody else is having a good time. If they see somebody that's in the corner not having a good time, maybe they'll go over there and pull them out. Hey, what's going on? What's your name? Right? Exhorters, they're going around the church and patting people on the back, maybe harder than they like, and just there they are, popping around, spreading cheer. Right? Right? So that's always a good thing. Right? Sometimes it's frustrating to me because I don't know. Exhorter cannot be a realist. I don't say cannot be. They have problems being a realist. Right? Because they're the always optimist. They're always looking at the good side of things. They see good in everything. All right? So this person fell down. Right? The prophet there is telling them to pick their feet up. The servant says, hey, I'm going to go back and we're going to get some tape. We're going to put it down there. The teacher's knelt down by the person that fell, trying to help him out with, you know, let me help you out to walk better. And now the encourager, what are they saying to this person that fell down? Hey, at least you didn't break anything when you fell, right? Or they'll say something like, hey, you make falling down look good. You right? They'll say something crazy like that, just something real positive, right? At least it's carpeted in here. You didn't hit a wood floor. You know, that's the way an encourager thinks. Right? They see the positive in everything. Right? Hey, I bet you won't do that again. You know, but it's always something positive they're trying to find. Right? Something good. Something, you know, car breaks down, they're finding something positive in it, you know, and it's crazy because they're always optimists. And I enjoy exhorters because they seem to be able to pull people up. There's a gift about that. But the part about exhorters that frustrates me personally is prophets tend to be realists. They look at things the way they are, because if you look at a problem and you identify a problem, it's easy to figure it out, right? Generally for a prophet-minded person. An exhorter, they try to put such a positive spin on things that it's like, come on, you know, that everything's not always positive, right? But now, and again, I can't go against that gifting, because if God's made him that way, God's made him that way for a reason, right? So yet one weakness that they have is they're always an optimist. Sometimes they're not real about things, you know? They can forget to take off the rose-colored glasses. They look at everything in a positive bent, right? Sometimes, all y'all know, sometimes you just can't look at things in a positive way, right? And there's a gift to be able to do that, and that's a prophet speaking. Some of y'all might disagree with me on that. Sometimes they forget to take off the rose-colored glasses. Sometimes they can act without thinking because, you know, if somebody's just been through a horrible tragedy, the last person you want coming up into the hospital room is somebody that's always happy. Right? Sometimes it's not time to pick people up. Sometimes there's a time to mourn. With exhorters, there's never time to mourn. You know, some people need to get that grief out. You know, sometimes sometimes they can come in there and be very overbearing about their personality and how they feel. They might seem like a prophet, if you will, somebody that loves to point out truth, but they're usually not as callous about it. They don't have to work about being insensitive, if you will, to people. All right, so those are the four we've looked at today. We've looked at the prophet, the truth teller. We've looked at the servant, the person that just works to no end, right? We've seen the teacher, person that loves details. And then we've also looked, the last one here we've looked at today is the exhorter, the encourager, right? Next week we're going to talk about the giver, and we're going to talk about the person who leads, which is like your administrators. And then we're going to talk about the person of mercy. And I think it's neat that they put prophet in the beginning and mercy at the end, because of all those giftings, prophet and mercy are the most opposite. All the others tend to go well, but the mercy and the prophets, they tend to butt heads a lot. Right? And we'll talk about that next week when we get to the prophet. And it's funny. I think it's funny. Anyway, the reason why, because mercy people are full of feelings and prophets aren't. So a lot of times, you can see where that goes. Right? Somebody crying about, never mind. The prophet side coming out there about complaining already about the mercy person. But anyway, that's the study this week. Next week, we continue with the next three. And then after that, my goal is to visit people in the Bible that have these giftings. right? Who in the Bible were the prophet types or your mercy types or your servants and things like that, right? So anyway, that's it. All right.